Good morning, Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. Iraq's Saddam Hussein has tried to test the embargo on his oil to no avail. He sent a tanker to the Saudi oil terminal at Yanbu on the Red Sea, but there were no tugs to help it dock, and Saudi officials turned it away. If it had been able to load, there may well have been a U.S.-Iraqi confrontation at sea, now that the Bush administration has agreed with a request from the Kuwaiti government in exile to interdict Iraqi oil tankers.
This is Bill McLaughlin in Cairo. The West is tightening its noose around Iraq. This morning, the lead warship of the seven-vessel-strong French task force steamed through the Suez Canal on the way to the Gulf. After the U.S., the French will have the largest naval commitment there. The French flagship is the carrier Clemenceau. Aboard are 40 helicopters armed with rockets and missiles, which could also be used for evacuating civilians from any potential war zone. The French will operate independently from the U.S. command, but Paris has promised it will cooperate closely with Washington. Also on the way to the Gulf are warships from Great Britain, Australia, and Canada. While the blockade formally starts only today, severe shortages have already hit Kuwait. Refugees coming from the occupied country say there are severe shortages of food, fresh water, and of all things, gasoline. Bill McLaughlin, CBS News. Cairo.
This is Linda Tyra in Kennebunkport, Maine. The Bush administration is tightening the noose. It says it will stop Iraqi oil shipments after receiving an official request from the exiled Emir of Kuwait to enforce sanctions against Iraq. President Bush says despite how others may interpret it, he believes under Chapter 7 of the UN Charter, the U.S. has the authority to block Iraqi oil from leaving the Persian Gulf.
No point getting into all these semantics.
The main thing is to stop the oil from coming out of there. That's what we're doing. Going to do.
The president, who is watching the Persian Gulf events from a working vacation in Kennebunkport, said he believes all shipments to and from Iraq can be stopped, including food shipments. Meanwhile, the administration has flatly rejected proposals by Iraq's Saddam Hussein to pull out his forces from Kuwait, but with strings attached, including Israeli withdrawal from the occupied West Bank. Linda Tyra, CBS News, Kennebunkport.
Reports from Israel say Iraq has been using the Jordanian Red Sea port of Aqaba to break the U.N. trade embargo, this in spite of Jordan's pledge to honor the embargo. Israeli TV showed truck convoys headed from Aqaba toward Iraq. Syria is the latest Arab nation to agree to send troops to help Saudi Arabia, joining those of Egypt and Morocco. As Alan Pizzi reports from Amman, one key Arab leader remains opposed to the Arab League stand against Saddam Hussein.
Jordan's King Hussein reiterated his position that the international military and boycott efforts hinder an Arab solution to the problem. And in a sign of growing war nerves here, the Jordanian monarch called on his people to implement civil defense training. Protests against the U.S. involvement have been growing increasingly heated here, and local newspapers today carried reports alleging that several people were killed in demonstrations in Saudi Arabia against the U.S. presence. Even if such reports are off the mark, they're exactly what people here expect and hope will happen. Alan Pizzi, CBS News, Amman.
The first American casualty of the Saudi Arabian deployment is Air Force Staff Sergeant John Campisi of Covina, California, 30 years old. He was killed yesterday, apparently when he was hit by a truck on a darkened runway. On Saturday, a British businessman was shot dead by Iraqi soldiers while trying to escape Kuwait. Tens of thousands of American soldiers, sailors, and airmen are now deployed in the Persian Gulf, with more on the way. How's their morale? Just ask this F-14 pilot on the USS Independence.
The adrenaline's been flowing, and pretty fired up about the scenario out here. Naturally, not a bunch of warmongers out here, but I think we all understand the calculated risks, and we made a pretty much a sober judgment of what's going on here and ready to put it on the line if that's what the big man calls for.
This is Dan Rather aboard the USS Independence, where morale is high and some of the best attack aircraft in the world are loaded and ready. But the attack aircraft do not leave the deck of this aircraft carrier. The admiral in charge says that they are in a posture that is one of defense and deterrence, at least for the moment. Tremendous amounts of American firepower continue to be amassed within striking distance of Kuwait and Iraq. Egyptian troops arrived in Saudi Arabia. More U.S. ground troops added to the area. Dan Rather, CBS News, aboard the USS Independence.
In Japan, stock prices nosedived after today's cancellation of Prime Minister Kaifu's planned trip to the Middle East because of the Persian Gulf crisis. The dollar firmed up against the Japanese yen. A Palestinian group in Lebanon says it has freed a second Swiss Red Cross worker after more than 10 months in captivity, but neither the Swiss Foreign Ministry nor the International Red Cross could confirm that 24-year-old Elio Enriquez has been released. Tear gas was fired last night as thousands of rock-throwing Canadians, angered by that Mohawk Indian bridge blockade, attacked police near the barricade. For local residents, the month-long bridge closure has turned a 15-minute commute to Montreal into a 90-minute detour. As newsman Mark Rennie reports, at least 35 people were hurt in the riot, including a dozen police officers.
Châteauguay residents have returned to their homes following lengthy heated battles with riot squads. The clashes broke out after angry protesters hurled bottles and bats at police officers, sparking riot squads to lob canisters of tear gas into the crowd of 10,000. Fighting ensued into the early morning hours until at approximately 1 o'clock when the riot squad forcibly dispersed the crowd, firing several consecutive shots of tear gas, thus forcing residents to retreat to their homes. Mark Rennie for CBS News in Châteauguay, Quebec.
That violence came after Quebec authorities and the Mohawks made some apparent progress in negotiating an end to that conflict. Thousands of firefighters have started to gain ground on hundreds of wildfires burning over the drought-parched West. Flames have blackened more than 400,000 acres, about 625 square miles, in seven western states. An estimated 20,000 firefighters are on the lines, including 1,200 soldiers from Fort Carson, Colorado. Nearly 2,000 firefighters have dug a protective line around Yosemite National Park's Merced Grove, its stand of giant 3,000-year-old sequoias, and a historic cabin that once housed an early park ranger station. What does it say about America, the noisy and often violent gathering of 300,000 bikers in Sturgis, South Dakota? John Huck of KOTA Rapid City reports on the 50th Black Hills Motor Classic.
Violence marred the week-long rally. A gunfight between rival gangs broke out at a local bar Saturday night. Earlier in the week, police shot and killed a biker during a burglary. Sturgis Police Chief Jim Bush says the rally has worn out his officers.
There was times when, along with being tired, working long hours, walking the street, sore feet, stress, shootings. It was tough. It was tough on all of them.
Police also issued over 1,600 traffic tickets and made 73 drug arrests. Despite the problems, people here say they want the rally to continue because it brings so much money to local businesses. John Huck for CBS News, Rapid City.
In Dallas, four women died in a fire at a halfway house for mental patients. Police have arrested a woman on suspicion of arson. The dollar is down, and on Wall Street, the Dow Industrials are off 21.28, 10 past 7.